If you wouldn't mind turning in your Bible, iPad, phone to Jeremiah, we're going to be looking at chapter 2. So standing around the kitchen this morning, eating some cinnamon rolls, getting ready for church, and I'm standing there in the kitchen, and I'm looking around, and I'm thinking, what a fantastic morning. All my daughters are standing here in the kitchen with me. And I just thought to myself, and I think I even said it, wow, all three of you together, it doesn't happen that often anymore. And the things that we take for granted, I know some of you are in that stage where your kids are gone and whatever, and you cherish the moments when you're able to be together. You know, I'm not a particularly sentimental person. Seems like since I've got this autoimmune, whatever's going on with me, seems like it has lowered my emotional immunity too. Like it's like I'm more emotional than I ever have been. I think it's made Becky more emotional too. I don't understand, but it's rubbed off. I don't know, but I'm also a pretty forgetful person. I don't remember details very, very much, especially like single individual events. But I was thinking, as I was preparing for this lesson, I've been doing a study in my own personal study of the book of Jeremiah. I've been starting the life of Jeremiah, the book of Jeremiah, and just trying to draw some things out from his story and from his work, which he had an extremely tough job to do. But I was thinking about the idea of, so we're going to talk this morning about our relationship with God. And, I mean, we're at church, right? Relationship with God. And you're like, oh, we've heard that one before. What is that supposed to look like? And I'm trying to, in my own life, I'm trying to figure out, what is that supposed to be? What is it supposed to look like? I don't know that I've grown up thinking about it in the right way. Particularly. And so, but I was thinking this, as I was preparing for this, I was thinking about two specific moments in my life that I cannot forget. And many of you have been through this same moment in your life. The first moment that comes to mind, it's really vivid, and it's not like that to be that way for me. But I remember standing in, it wasn't in this building, but I remember standing about this spot. And I remember doors opening in the back and my bride walking down the aisle. How many of you men remember that moment? And ladies have a little bit different perspective. You're seeing, you know, you're coming from the back to the front, you know, and it's all about you, you know, we get it. And you see, and I hope you see what we see, a person just for you. You see and you feel that emotional response of, wow, she's mine. God made her just for me. In this moment, is a very special moment. And I don't know, I never really asked Becky what she was thinking. Like, oh no, what have I done? Whoa. Why did he pick that tux? It was really cheap. That's the reason. But that moment, and it even now, you close your eyes and you can see it in your face. You can see the face. You can feel the emotional response, right, of, wow, she's all mine. 25, 27-ish years later, I still think about it, I still feel it, and I can still look in her eyes, and I can still think the same thing, right? We just don't take the time to do that like we should. Second moment. I can remember seeing the face of each of my children for the first time. I don't know, Dad didn't get that experience. They didn't let them back in the in the, what do you call that, surgery room or whatever. They didn't let him back there then. And Dad wouldn't have gone anyway. You know, they might have, you know, slipped and said the word pregnant or something, you know. So anyway, but even at that, he remembers, and you guys that didn't go back in those days, I guess, to that, you remember that child being carried out, right, and seeing their face for the first time. What an amazing moment that was. What an amazing experience that was. And those two moments, you know, will stay with me forever. And I understand ladies have similar experiences in those two areas as well. But for men, it takes a lot to get us to think about it, to get us emotional, to think about how special that moment really is. And here's what I've come to discover. Here's what I think I've come to discover. Is that that's how God looks at us. God looks at us in that very same way. It makes so much difference when I think about my own response. And then I think, how could God look at me like that? With such love. Love doesn't even describe it, right? It's just, it's kind of a feeling and an experience you can't even explain to anyone else. And when God looks at me, that's what he thinks. He doesn't look at me and think, oh, what an awful sinner you are. He doesn't look at me and think, wow, you've messed up so many times. Wow, what in the world have I done? He looks at me and he thinks, you're the one for me. You are special to me. You care. I care so much for you. And I look forward to a life spent with you. And it's hard to get my mind around. It really is. Because I don't think I've ever really thought that way until just in the last little bit of my life. That God really loves me that much. That God really cares for me that much. Now, how do I respond to that? How do I respond to that? Because God describes himself by using the two most precious relationships that are possible on this earth. He says, we are his bride. He's our groom and we're his bride. The most precious relationship two people can ever have on the face of this earth. And then he says, I'm your father and you are my child. The most precious relationship two people can ever have. He doesn't say and emphasize, I'm your master and you're my slave. I'm your creator and you're my created. You know, it's a very personal, down-to-earth, precious relationship that God describes between he and us. And I'm not sure we actually... I'm not sure I've ever actually thought about it in that way as much as I should. And if you don't believe it, look in the book of Jeremiah. And the first message that, well, he calls Jeremiah in the first chapter. He calls him into service. He said, I've chosen you for this purpose. But then in chapter 2, he says, here's how I want you to present me to the people of Israel. Here's how I want you to describe my love for them. So in chapter 2, he begins and he says, announce this to Jerusalem. I remember the loyalty of your youth, your love as a bride, how you followed me in the wilderness, in a land not sown. You were holy to the Lord. That word can also be translated faithful. You were the first fruits of his harvest. But That's how God describes his people. That's from God's perspective. What he sees, what he thinks, what he feels for his people. You are like the bride. You're a faithful child who will follow me anywhere. You know, one of the things, and I'm really glad I didn't think about this as much on those two occasions. I thought about more with when the children were born. They are mine to protect. They're mine to love and protect. And here's God expressing that same sentiment. Back when we began our relationship, there was love that existed between me and you. And that love was very special. And you would follow me anywhere, he says, even into the wilderness. Even into a land where there was nothing. You would follow me there without question. You're set apart as something special to me. And then God asks this question in verse 5. What went wrong? What did I do that you have found fault in me? What have I done that this relationship is not what it used to be? That it has been separated out and it's not. We'll look at the rest of this in just a second. But God actually asks the question, what did I do wrong that you have found fault in me? After this great, intimate relationship that we have shared, what has happened to it? You know, sometimes I think we get, and we've actually been talking about this in class on Sunday mornings, the idea of many people's view of relationship with God, it's all about rules and regulations. It's all about God telling me what to do and me doing it. And I don't believe that's true at all. I'm not saying rules and regulations are not important, but I think those rules and regulations are set forth by a loving God who wants to see us live the very best life possible. But it's all about love. It's always been about love. And will always be about love. And not so much about God's love, I mean, about my love for Him. It's mainly His love for me. I don't think there's anything that our children could do that would make me not love them. That would make me think, you know what, our love is over. It's all about, and it's always been about love. But I want you to notice what he says about them. Starting in we'll finish starting in verse 5. It says, what fault did your fathers have in me that they have gone so far from me? They have followed worthless idols and therefore became worthless themselves. They stopped asking, where is the Lord who brought us from the land of Egypt, who led us through the wilderness, through a land of deserts and ravines, through a land of drought and darkness, a land no one traveled through and where no one lived? I brought you to a fertile land to eat its fruit and bounty, but after you entered, you defiled my land. You made my inheritance detestable. My priests quit asking, where is the Lord? The experts in the law no longer knew me, and the rulers rebelled against me. The prophets prophesied by Baal and followed useless idols. Why have you done these things? Why have you followed these worthless idols? Why have you become worthless yourself? Why have you stopped seeking after me? Why have you forgotten all that I've done for you? Why have you defiled the land that I've given you? Why don't you know me anymore? And why have you rebelled against me? You know, when I read this, This is just me. And if you disagree, that's fine. But I'm speaking, you can speak next week. What's his emotion here? If you read through this, what sense of emotion do you get? Do you get anger? Appointing God, I can't believe that you did that again. I can't be... That's not what I get. He sounds hurt to me. He sounds like he is emotionally distraught over the fact that the very ones that he loves as a bride and a children have deserted him, have left him behind, have forgotten him, are worshiping and following idols, which he calls worthless because they're not really gods. And I can feel that. I can feel that. Many of you, all of you, have felt that sense of, I don't know if the word is betrayal, but it's wanting the best for someone and they just will not accept it. I've given you everything, and yet you've rejected it. And here, God is just, he just sounds like he's overwhelmed with grief. I still love you. I still want you to have the best. But yet, you have done these things against me. And I don't understand why. And then he goes on a little further. And he says in verse 11, says, has a nation ever exchanged its gods? But they're not gods. Yet my people have exchanged their glory for useless idols. Be horrified at this. Be shocked and utterly appalled. For my people have committed a double evil. They have abandoned me, the fountain of living water, and they have dug cisterns for themselves, cracked cisterns that cannot hold water. So here's what God says. He says this idea of double. You've not only left me, but you have replaced me. You've left me and you've replaced me. And what you've replaced me with is not worth anything. You've made a choice, and your choice is not me. He says, you got two choices here. What I've given you, fountains of living water. Instead, you said, I'm just going to dig my own wells, thank you. I'm going to figure out for myself what's best for me. And I'm going to dig my own well. He said, the problem is, your well doesn't hold any water. He says, your cisterns are cracked. And every time you try to fill that cistern with something other than me, what happens? It's gone before you know it. You look in there, oh, it's empty again. And that's what a life without God is empty. Everything that we try to put in this life that is not God, empty and meaningless. My question is, after trying that a couple of times, why don't we figure it out? Oh, wait, we're not talking about us. Sorry, we're talking about children of Israel. Why didn't they figure it out? God's standing there, living water, springs of living water, and I've given them to you. No thanks. I'll dig my own thanks. And how hurtful that must have been to God to see his people doing this. So here's the question. What useless things are you replacing God with in your life? What useless things am I replacing God with in my life? You see, he still offers springs of living water, and yet so many people are like, no thanks, I'm going to dig my own well. I'm going to make my own way, realizing that every time I do, it's empty and meaningless. But yet I continue to do it. Continue to seek after things that are useless. Jeremiah 3, starting in verse 19. He says this. And again, I don't understand how he can even say this after all that the people have done to him. He says, "How I long to make you my sons and to give you a desirable land, the most beautiful inheritance of all the nations. I want you to call me Father and never turn away from me. But as a woman may betray her lover, so you have betrayed me, house of Israel." I mean, what I get here is, I want nothing more than for you to love me. As a bride loves her husband, as a child loves their father and their mother, I want that relationship with you. No matter what you've done, no matter how you think, no matter where you've been, this is what I want. This is the ideal relationship that God wants with his people. And yet he says, "But you've betrayed me again and again." This gives me the picture of Jesus as he's standing in Jerusalem for the last time. Matthew chapter 23, and this passage makes so much more sense now that you see God's attitude toward his people in Jeremiah. Matthew 23, Jesus is standing, looking at over the city of Jerusalem, and he says, "How often I wanted to gather my children together, as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. Yet you are not willing. And now your house is left desolate." He's talking to the same people. He's talking to the Jews. "I came into this world and all I really wanted to do was just hug you. I just wanted to put you under my wings of protection. That's why I came into this world, was to put you under my wings of protection. And yet you've rejected me once again." God said, "I've come myself this time and wanted to put you under my wings, and yet you have rejected me." Flip with me just another moment to Galatians chapter 4, and then I'll be done. Galatians chapter 4. Like Tommy, when the pressure's on, you can't find the verse, or you can't find the Ephesians, Galatians, you know. So we're going to look at, see if I can find it. We're going to start in verse 6. "Because you are sons, God has sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, crying, 'Abba, Father.' You're no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God." See, he's talking to us and he says, we have the same chance. We have the same opportunity as the Israelites that he's talking to way back in Jeremiah and that Jesus is talking to in the book of Matthew. He says, you have the same opportunity. This is how God views you. You are his children. And what he wants to hear from your heart and from your lips more than anything is this: Father. He wants that relationship with us. He wants us to call him Father. And not just Father. Abba is like the most endearing term that you can possibly use for a parent, right? Abba, Father. Some people say it means daddy. I'm not sure about that. But it gives you the kind of the idea that it's an endearing term. It's an intimate term. And that's what he wants from us. But he goes on to say in verse 8, "But in the past when you didn't know God, you were enslaved to things that by nature are not God's. But now, since you know God, or rather have become known by God, how can you turn back again to the weak and bankrupt forces to be enslaved by them again?" And there's the real question. That once I realize my place in this relationship with God, how can I possibly reject Him for the things that are empty, worthless, and meaningless? But yet I do it all the time. I'll speak for me. All of you are going, "Oh, that's terrible. Why do you do that?" The question is, I think I'm at the end of my notes. It's such a mess. I can't tell what in the world I've done and what I haven't done. Where are you right now in your relationship with God? First of all, I want to ask this. Is it possible for you to see yourself as the bride of God? Is it possible for you to see yourself and picture yourself in the relationship with God as His child? Seeing you for the first time and looking at your face and hearing Him and understanding Him saying, "You are my special creature. You're my special relationship." Is it possible for us to even do that? And here's the second question goes along with that, and it's, what's my response to that? What is my response? How do I know how I'm supposed to deal with that? And I think it's simply this. We're supposed to love Him. Jesus was asked, and they were actually just trying to mess with Him. They weren't really trying to get an answer. So Jesus tells us, if there's one thing we're supposed to do, what is it? What's the greatest rule that we're supposed to follow? And Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. And because you love the Lord your God with all your soul and your heart and your mind, the natural response is to love others. It's all about a love relationship. And you want to know the truth, I think, is that's really all God wants. It's all He expects. That's all He really desires from us. Is for Him to show His great love for us and for us to respond in love. For us to react and live in love with Him. It takes a lot of work. These two precious relationships that we talked about earlier, or that I talked about, they're the toughest relationships of all time. Margie, has it been a tough relationship for you to have Tim in your life for all these years? You're dealing, we know. I don't know how you deal with it so well. But all of us can say that. Right? Marriage is a tough relationship. There's so much work that goes into it. There's so much effort and energy that has to be placed into that relationship. What about as a parent? Man, that's a tough relationship between a parent and a child. It takes a lot of work, but I'm telling you, they're the two most rewarding relationships of all time. And that's exactly what God wants from us. Is to show Him love, honor, and respect. And to live our lives in response to that. Knowing all along, here's Israel, and they've done all this junk. I mean, I can feel good about myself, you know? I mean, goodness, look at all the stuff they did. And God comes to them at the end of the passage and said, all I want you to do is call me Father. All I want you to do is to call me and look at me like your husband. Please respond to me in love. I think we make it way too complicated. I didn't say easy. It's not easy, definitely. But I want you to, today, I want you to think about and examine, not just as we sing the song, but today, look at and examine your relationship, your heart, your life with God, and see if it resembles anything that God desires from us. What is our response? What is your response? And let's try to get on the same page. Let's try to view ourselves as God views us in this very precious, intimate relationship. Chris has chosen a song. I don't remember what it is, but if you would get your books out, and Chris is going to lead us in whatever song it is. 940. Let's all stand.